It is fascinating. You know, if you can just imagine for a minute that if you could pretend that analog was, you know, like the bulletin board, it would be kind of like, okay, well, I can reach this repeater on Caesar's Head that I'm talking on now, but I can't get much past that. But with packet, I can physically go, well, not physically, but through the radio, I can go to Caesar's Head and then capitalize on their antenna and their height and say, okay, well, how many stations can you hear? And it'll tell me, oh, I hear 10 stations. Okay, well, if you can hear Shelby, then I want to go to Shelby. So I can link up with Caesar's Head, then link up with Shelby. And I had a station in Seneca the other day. I can't reach Seneca from here with the beam or the amp. I just can't do it. But I bounce around those mountains four different bulletin boards, and see, some of them offer a chat to where you can do keyboard to keyboard. It's instantaneous, just like, you know, sending a text message. So you can sit there and just, you know, yak away on the keyboard. You know, I know that's not everybody's cup of tea, but, you know, when you get into, you know, wanting to contribute to the community and, you know, if you're needed for emergencies or whatnot, you know, that can be, you know, helpful. But, you know, the whole thing's just kind of neat to me. It may eventually fade, but right now I'm learning, and that's the fun part about it for me, is trying to learn and struggling for a week, and then all of a sudden you go, oh my gosh, I got it. I figured out how this works. And that just keeps me leaning into it.
Satisfying part of it when that light clicks on over your head, or you realize, well, you know, I know how to do this now, so move on to, you know, the more complex parts of it. I know they use keyboard a lot, and I think they had, I don't know if it was a net or what it was. Anyway, it was someplace. They'd be on like two or three nights a week. He just had a shack. He had a nice tower, but he had 2 meter beams up there and a 6 meter beam, and he'd get on that packet, and then he'd be going. He could stay up to 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. Of course, after he retired, you know, he didn't have to worry about getting up the next day. But we get in that, he'd be going to town on that thing. And I didn't get, you know, I was so tired, I didn't get the fascination of it. But it makes a lot more sense to me now than it did then. But he loved it. That's all he said. He kept saying, "You need to get on this. You need to get on this." And I just never did it.
My kids, you know, they do not understand this whole, you know. When they left, we tore their bedroom, you know, just tore it completely apart and turned it into the, you know, they call it the war room. I went from their bedroom to the war room. And so, you know, all the radios and all the, you know, this stuff laying around, this, that, and the other, they just kind of like. So my oldest son was here. He's not too long ago, I guess. And he was in here in Hamtramck talking with me. Dad, what are you doing? What is all this? What, you know, you did this for your career, and why are you? He just didn't get it. And I said, okay, I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you right now. So I just, you know, jumped in one of the packet machines and sent him a text message on his phone. just soon I keyed the radio, and about 8 seconds later, he got a text on his phone, and he said, did you did that from the radio? I said, yeah, I sure did, so, you know, and the other thing is, and Jerry, I don't know quite what to think about this. You have to, let my radio drop. KO4NUE with N4DJC. I'm thinking I don't think there's any legalities with it. But this is one of the only modes, I don't have enough experience to say this, but this is one node or one mode of operation that I know of that will allow a non-licensed operator to interface with a licensed operator. So in other words, I can send a text message to my son on his cell phone from my 2-meter radio, and he to that address that was, you know, to who sent it. And it will be waiting in the bulletin board for me when the bulletin board receives it. Now, I'll have to log in to get it, but still, it's there, you know. And I don't know quite what to think about that. I think it's neat, but, you know, obviously they can't respond or access it unless I contact them first. But I can definitely send him a text message on his phone, and he can reply. And, two minutes later, I can go to the message board, and there's his message. So I don't know what to think about that, but, you know, what do you think?
For NUE and for DJC, I don't see any problem with that at all. He's not contacting you. Basically, they just leaving a message on a bulletin board somewhere through, you know, it is a form of RF, I guess, if you're on the phone, but it's not the same thing as, you know, operating a radio, so I don't see a problem with it. I know that you can do that on APRS, too. I don't know if they can send a message back to you or not. I'm not sure. But, like I said, I don't know if they did it or not, but it's just like leaving a message being able to forward it to a bulletin board somewhere else that you could do the, I think the big thing about bag, at least when it was so popular, was, you know, we didn't carry cell phones with us, you know, then they could text message, and very few people had cell phones in those days, so it was a lot more popular then because of that. But, yeah, the other thing is, it's just there's so much more you can do with it. It's not just a one layer type of communication. It's got a lot of facets. You know, it's like an onion. You just keep peeling layers off of it. Find out there's just a lot of things a lot of stuff that was done years ago. People just realizing, oh, gosh, I didn't know they could do that. You know, I had a guy ask me not long ago. As a matter of fact, let me let this thing drop. APRS, and I said, yeah, so, you know, he was talking about, you know, he said, that's, you know, that real popular back in the late 90s, and APRS has been around a long time. I said, it's been back in the mid-80s, actually, and I said, that a lot of people, I said, just, it was, you know, more experimental thing then, but, you know, this is the same way with packet. Packet's been around a long time. There's still a lot of people that use it. I wasn't aware of that. Yeah, that it was as active as it is, and I started digging into it after, you know, I spoke, you know, a few weeks ago about it.
NUE and 4DJC. You still in there, Jerry?
Did I talk it down?
No, you just kind of dropped out. You didn't know how active it was until we talked a couple weeks ago. But, so I've got a Yaesu 400 some XR XDR or something. It's APRS radio in the truck, and it's the most complicated thing. I cannot figure out how to send, you know, a message on that thing. I really haven't taken the time to spend with it that I should, I guess. But I have figured out how to turn the beacon on, because I go up to the deer camp, or if I go on a trip somewhere, I'll turn it on, and Anna knows she can come in here and decode the packet, or she can go to APRSFI and, you know, see where the truck is. Because I'll go up deer camp and, you know, get on the tractor and bush hog, or get on the bobcat or whatever, you know. You get hurt or something and she doesn't hear from me, then she could at least find out where the truck is, you know. But I'm not too good at sending messages on that little bitty screen, you know. I get things laid out here where I can work on them and see what's going on. My eyes don't work so good no more. I can't do anything without glasses anymore. And Jerry, it's the most frustrating thing. It absolutely frustrates me to death because I literally can't do anything without the glasses. And I've noticed here in the last 4 or 5 months that I go to Walmart and buy these old, you know, cheap glasses there at the Walmart store. And I'm having to buy two different magnifications. One for the house, and then when I go down there and do machine work, I gotta have much stronger to do the machine work. But it's that little bitty screen trying to figure out how to, you know, hand jam a little message out, and I got big old fingers, and them little buttons are so small, and you can't just backspace, you know. So I just gave up, you know. I just send the beacon out so she knows where I am. I don't care about saying hello to everybody. It's, you know, I think I managed to get one of them in there that, you know, I send out. But, you know, I'm just getting old, I guess. And those small screens just don't work for me.
AM4NU and 4DJC. Well, join the club then. Wait till you're about 15 or 20 years older, you'll see how much worse your eyes get. One thing about, Ken Woods and Jesus too, Jesus is a little bit harder to work than the Ken Wood is on APRS, I think. And but you can go ahead and put messages, you know, pre-written messages in there. That's what I do with mine. If I'm like working the space station, I'll have a pre-programmed message where somebody will send me a message. They'll see my call sign pop up, you know, on the downlink, and they'll send me a message, you know, reply to my station, and then I'll say, you know, I sent a pre-done message that said, you know, my grid square is EM84, QSL ? And then they'll send one that says, you know, QSL, my grid square, so-and-so. And I'll say, send another that says 73. But they're already done. And you can put multiple, there should be 5 or 6 of them you can put in there. That makes, I can't type anything yet on that screen. It takes me forever to get one little message in and get it right, you know, capitalize stuff and put the spaces. And it's just, you know, I can barely send a text message on the phone, but sending a message on the Yazoo APRS, I think, is a whole lot harder.
Let me tell you a little story. So when I first got KO4NUE and 4DJC, when I first got the thing, I brought it in here and put it in the ham shack, and I operated in the ham shack for a week or two just to kind of learn it, you know, because you driving down the road, you can't be, you know, fumble finger and everything. You got to kind of halfway know how to operate the thing. So I got comfortable enough with it where I could put it in a truck. So we was going down the road one day, and Dave Watson, when I first got it. He make me so mad because I'd get a beacon from him where his radio was beaconing, and we'd ride down the arena and I was going somewhere. And I said, "Hey," I said, "there's Dave. He's you know, there's a little message on there," and I'm sitting here saying, "Okay, open the message, click on this, click on that," all while I'm driving now. And I could get two or three letters out, and he sent another message. And then we got a couple of miles up the road, and he's just like, bam, bam, bam. He's just sending message after message after message. And I ain't got past the first one, and I ain't got three letters into the first one. And I said, you need to take that thing back in the ham shack. You need to do some more learning, because Dave's just, he's got it figured out, but you ain't.
The Ford has a touchscreen on it, doesn't it?
It does, but eventually I figured out that, you know, it's helpful if you pre-write the messages. And once I got that figured out, then, you know, but I called Dave. I said, "How are you sending those that so fast? I mean, it's just like instantaneous, you know." And then finally I figured out, okay, well, they're probably pre-written. But I just, you know, I think I got one or two of them in there. Nothing special. But it's got a, you can order a hand mic with it. It's got a camera in it. You can actually send a picture over the thing, over APRS. But I don't need all that. I just need her to know where the truck is in case something ever happens to me. You know, like, know where to, you know, start looking or whatnot. But you know, I tell you, I was on APRS FI today. And, my goodness, it's a vehicle's going to Shelby. I brought the screen up, was looking at it, and I bet you there's 15, 20, maybe even a little more vehicles all headed to Shelby, just beaconing away.
Yeah, I was watching the same thing this morning. I was on there looking at it, and I have to kind of screen my messages because I get these weather stations and all other kinds of stuff, which is fine. But, you know, I get an airplane flying, you know, and stuff like that. And sometimes you can get I've got a hot air balloon or two, you know, a year or so ago. And, you know, a lot of times they track those with APRS, but it's just beacon, and they don't reply unless it's an auto reply or something like that. And that's kind of frustrating. I always, when I'm at the radio, when I turn mine on and send mine out, I always know to them, just live off on that way. If somebody wants to send me a message, they know that I'll answer. Otherwise, you know, you don't know where you're going to get anybody or not.
UE and 4DJC. Right. So, I think the original question was, you know, how far down have you gone? I use APRS to transmit telemetry up at the camp, so I can keep a tab on, you know, the reserve, the power up there, and the temperature. And, you know, that's kind of neat to where, you know, I mean, that's 60 some odd miles away. And I just, you know, come in here and tune the radio to a frequency. If I wait just a couple of minutes, you know, I get whatever information I need. So I guess to answer your question is, I'm not so impressed with APRS when it's just a basic packet, a lat, a long, and a location. Yeah, that's kind of fascinating. But when you get into being able to control the information that's sent on the packet, now that's a different ball game. That's a game changer for the way I see it. Because, you know, now you can get into, you know, automated responses. Hey, when you see this, do that. When you see that, do this. Or, you know, if a condition changes, you know, 60 miles away, I want you to send me a packet. I want to know about it. And then to be able to take that packet and link it with a email address or send me a text on my phone. Okay, now think about that for a minute. You know, that might be violating some, well, you know, this is ham radio. It needs to, you know, stay RF. Well, I don't know about that. I don't mind getting a text on my phone when, you know, battery level drops below what I need to know. You know, that's useful information. But to me, a lat and a long and a location, I mean, I don't mean no disrespect, Jerry. Don't take it this way, but to me, that's like watch a paint dry. But I mean, it's neat. But when I can control what's sent in that packet, now that's like I said, that's a different ball game.
You know, 4EUE and 4DJ say, yeah, that's exactly right. That's why that although I got packet, I mean, I've got APRS. And I turn it on. I'll turn it on for a few days, and I'll turn it back off again. I mean, it's not. I'm not traveling with it, so it's not. Nobody's looking for me or anything like that. So, and I use it mainly for other things, and that's why the regular packet would be more interesting to me than the APRS. Although it is, both of them are interesting, but. One more so than the other, because one is just, it's like a, when you run into apers on your car or at your house, it's like just a passive thing. It's just beaking it out every 20 or 30 minutes or whatever. And sitting there at the weather stations, a different story. Like your dash 10 is a gateway, I think, if I'm not wrong. That's a different story there. That lets people know what's going on with the weather stations and stuff like that, that are, you know, they have remote. Say that, you know, like you do, where you've got one area where you want to track what the weather is, you know, you got your APRS there just beaconing and lets you know what's going on. That sort of thing is important for them. But just, you know, somebody's just around the house, and it's just another feature.
UN4DJC, right. So, you know, prime example, my oldest son, he got married not too long ago, and he's got an old Jeep Wrangler, you know, no air conditioning, canvas top, doors, the thing will beat you to death. Well, last month or so, back when it was so hot, him and his wife, our new daughter-in-law, they came here for something. We was going to have a meal or something, and they wanted to go into town for something. So Lewis comes in here and says, hey, Dave, can I borrow the truck? And I don't let my boys drive my truck. I've learned the hard way. No, you're not driving my truck. No, don't even ask. And they know better than to even ask. Well, he's married. You know, things have changed a little bit. So he come in here and he says, Dave, can I drive your truck? And I turned around and looked at him and I said, sure. Where are you going? Well, we're just going up here to the store. You know where this is going, right? We're just going up here to the store. We'll be right back. we'll just, you know, we won't have much air conditioning in it. I said, oh, absolutely, go right ahead. So, oh, they bebopped out, and I mean, it's a new truck, you know, and bebopped out, and I thought, okay, I'm going to have fun with this, because as soon as you turn the ignition on the truck, the radio comes on. And so, he has no idea, you know, this little 3-mile trip up to the store, yeah, so, I'm sitting here, you know, tracking everywhere he goes. And, you know, so when he came back, oh, I lit him up, you know. So, you know, it's useful, you know, it is. It's useful in the right circumstance.
Did he have any idea what you were doing?
No, I never told him. I'm not going to either. Because I don't want him to know it's the radio that's doing it, you know. But I did hear his our new daughter-in-law, they came in here in the ham shack, and I said, hey, what'd you go to Greer for? And then you went to StarTex and then to Inman. And they're both looking at me like she don't know what to think about me. She ain't been in family long enough, you know. So she's standing there, you know, like a, you know, 8-year-old, I guess. And I'm just giving him a hard time. I'm not upset or nothing, you know. But she hadn't learned me yet. So, well, they, you know, when I got done with him, you know, you went here, there, this, that, and the other. And then when they walked out of the ham shack, I heard a mumble, well, I told you to turn the cell phone off. They think it's the cell phone, which I'm sure, you know, I probably could figure out some way to track them, I guess. But they're on their own plan, so can't really do that. But I can do it with APRS, but I'm not going to tell him.
I guess it's KO4NUEN4DJC. That's a great story. It tickles me to death. Hear something like that. They don't have a clue as to how you're doing it. And I would let old Nathan, if they didn't already know, I sure would let on to them about it. I bet you next time they borrow that truck, they go straight where they're going and straight back, though.
See, that's the thing, is it's not my oldest that I'm, you know, worried about with the truck. It's my middle son, you know, he's a little bit less cautious. But I know that they talk. They are, you know, they're pretty tight. So if I want to get to child number 3, I can fuss at child number 1 a little bit, and it moves right on down the line. And that, you know, that negates future problems. You know, I hate to do that, but hey, you know, you do what you gotta do, you know. If you've got kids, it's, you know, I know you've done it too, you might not admit it, but I'll do it in a minute.
We know how that works. And that way I don't have to repeat myself.
Right, and that's why gray hair is called a crown of wisdom. You learn real quick. You do what you gotta do, you know. So, my daughter, she's the world's worst. She, little weedy thing, and she's, you know, always with the goats, or always down in the pasture, cowboy boots, and, you know, she's a good worker. She, you know, if she wants to borrow the truck, I don't have a problem with it. Because she can, I mean, it's a big truck, big 2500 Dodge, you know, big diesel in it. And I, you know, I run ton, 3/4 ton trucks because I, you know, got some equipment I need to move, or always something here on the farm that needs to be done. But, you know, I don't I don't have too much of an issue with her. But that's, you know, that's my daughter. You know, she got me wrapped around her pinky, I guess. But, you know, she's pretty careful with it. And, but the boys, no way, buddy. No way.
KO4NUEN4DJC, you know, the thing about daughters is they don't want to disappoint the dad either. That's something I found in 40 years of it, that they're a little different. But my son's good too, though. He's got his own truck to worry. He's got a new Toyota Tacoma. He can worry about that himself.
The other thing is, you know, it's four-wheel drive. And that's for a young male, that's, you know, that's just like, oh, I got to try this out. And not in my truck, you're not doing it. No way. But Abby, she's, you know, I got a 30-foot gooseneck, and she pulled that thing like you wouldn't believe, you know. But boys are just, you know, all over the road, don't really pay attention, trying to, you know, talk on the phone while you know. I'm not having it. You know, we got old beater here, old beat-up truck we keep here on the farm. You know, you go down there and get in that thing. But, you know, you're not getting my truck and do that, but I do use APRS for that, so I can, you know, she knows where the truck is, and, you know, where if the boys borrow it, I can, you know, I got a little mojo on them where I can, how does Daddy know, you know, Daddy knows everything. How does he know those things? You got to keep something secret, you know, because, you know, at some point you stop being a hero to your kids. So when you get past that stage and you're not their hero anymore, then you got to compensate somehow. So I quit being their hero years ago, so now I'm just the crotchety old daddy that knows everything. And, you know, it's not ideal, but I'll take it.
Major Dad, that's always the best. That's always the best way to handle it anyway, I think. I never had to spank my kids. They were scared of me. I never laid a hand on either one of them, I don't think, except when they're about 3 years old or something like that. Just gave them a swat, you know, on the butt, but that's about it. But you know, if you raise them that way, you don't have to worry about that anymore. I remember you talk about that's the difference between boys and girls, and boy, I tell you one thing, they'd come to attention, and both of them would be, you could see them whispering to each other in the back seat when they got a little older, and it's like that telegraph line, don't do that, because he already got on to me about this one, you know, just before we left the house or something like that. They passed no messages.
Right, exactly. And they've learned, especially the boys, that, you know, I've told them all growing up, I don't know how many times, I know what you're thinking before you think it. I know what you're going to say before you say it. Because, you know, I've, you know, been through that too, you know. I know exactly what they're going to do. And, you know, they always... always remind me of that, you know, I can hear them whispering, or, you know, when they're all here, and I'll, you know, get on one of them a little bit, just to pick on them or aggravating. It's funny, Jerry, because I can be sitting there in the chair, and they're in their 20s, you know, and you fuss at one of them, and I've learned, it's funny. I don't say anything, but I can fuss on one of them just a little bit, and if you could just watch out of the corner of your eye when you turn your head, their two phones will light up, you know. And then, you know, the one you fussing at, he, you know, acts like he's, you know, getting a text message or he's looking at something on the internet. But I figured out that, you know, they're communicating with one of them. It's like a beehive around here, you know. They think they're smart, but I got them. Daddy knows what's going on.
Conspiracy to me, I'd you know, I'd live far enough apart where they don't. We get together, you know, once a week or so, something like that. We'll all go over there and visit with them a while, but we don't have that kind of stuff going on. But now, when they were young, when they were in their 20s, now it's a whole different story. They were in collusion with each other about some things. It's like I was telling my wife's got a sister. Her sister's about 10 years younger than she is. I said, you know, they get together and get scratching around and down. I mean, it's that thick as thieves. Now, tighter like my buddy told me, tighter than bark on a tree.
In 4DJC, right. We went through a stage with them where it was just fighting all the time and, you know, whatnot. But now they've gotten older and, you know, getting some responsibilities, and they know, they're starting to figure out what things are all about. And they're pretty tight, you know. And, you know, they talk. And they help one another, and, you know, I ain't no telling, you know, what they're saying about me some of the times. We play so many jokes on one another, always scheming on one another, trying to get, you know, get a joke played or a prank or something. But as far as the fighting and scrapping goes, Jerry, when they were little, I came home from work one day, and my oldest son was on the front porch, and his face was purple, black, red. He had just magic marker marks all over his face, in his ears, up his nose, and he's on the front porch just squalling when I pulled up in the truck. So, you know, I got out and, you know, picked him up and, you know, talked with him. What's the matter? Well, Perry, the youngest son, he looked at me and he said, "Do you see what your son did to my face?" And what do you say, you know, just some kind of fighting all the time. So I went in and got Perry, and I always bring him in the bathroom, because when Daddy disciplined me, he'd take me in the bathroom. He'd close the toilet lid, and he'd sit on the toilet. And he'd make me stand there while he, you know, get all the facts and, you know, used to get a whooping. But anyway, we ended up in the bathroom, and let me let my radio drop. So Perry, the middle son, I said, Son, did you put all those marks on Lewis's face? And he said, "Yes, sir, I did. And I said, "Why? Why would you do something like that?" And he said, "Daddy, I did exactly what you taught me to do." And I said, What are you talking about? And he says, "Well, he laid the Lego down. He was done playing with it, so I picked it up. And when I picked it up, he tried to take it back." And he said, "And that's when I did exactly what you told me to do. First time I asked him to stop. The second time I told him to stop. And the third time I did what I had to do." So he sat on him and got some of those Crayola magic markers and just marked his whole face up. It wasn't nothing he could do. And when I came off work, I had to deal with it. So, you know how that goes.
That's too funny to be true there. So you see stuff like that when you see them, you have to turn your head sometimes, keep from laughing when they do stuff like that. It's more being, he lost his dignity more than anything.
Exactly. it's okay to, get in a scrap and, it's over in, 4 or 5 minutes. And, you sit on the tailgate or sit on the truck. When you fight like that, sometimes that fixes things, You learn that you gotta have respect for one another, because if you don't, you're gonna end up in something that's painful. But with the two boys, not so much. Until, they've got out on their own, it's always been a struggle. Abby talked both of them pretty young on. She's a little scrapper too. First year we built the house, we didn't have a lot of money. But I had we had a sawmill on the property, and I cut some wild cherry for had to make somebody some furniture or something. So for Christmas, I cut her some building blocks, 2x2, 2x4, or 2 inches by 4 inches, so she could stack them up and play with them or whatever. And it's red cherry, it's pretty hard stuff. Well, those were her blocks she got for Christmas, and we got the boys something else. I forget what it was, but Daddy gave me those, and the boys weren't allowed to mess with it, and when they did, they got in a big fight one day over it. When she picked up one of them blocks and hit Lewis in the face with it, blacked his eye, busted his lip, blacked his eye in one hit. So they, they learned real quick. They never didn't mess with Abby too much, but if she gets squalling too much, she knew Daddy'd come running in there. So I think that, kind of quelled things a little bit. But those two boys, they stayed in it pretty much growing up. But they think it's thieves now, and that's a little scary, because we do play a lot of pranks on one another, and that's troublesome for me, because if they can, I've always been able to divide and conquer, but now they're getting to where they don't have a problem working together, and that's going to be a problem for me. They're going to get me. They figure out how to work as a team, I'm in trouble.
4NUE and 4DJC, when they start ganging up on you, that's going to be a problem. And, when they get to that age, they're a little bit on the conniving side, too. They can figure out some stuff that you maybe us older folks, maybe we thought about it, maybe we didn't think about it, or maybe we forgot about it. But, they'll slip off on you and do something sometimes. Mine doesn't do that, but there was a time when we'd scare each other sometimes. And it just got to the point where I was going to have a heart attack and had to stop.
KO4NUN, 4DJC. Right. So, when they were growing up, Dad used to meet, my grandmother has a basement in the house, and I was always scared to go down the basement, because it's always dark down there. And so Dad would usually, I'd follow him down to the basement and do whatever. Meemaw kept food down there, and the washing machine, and freezer and things like that. Well, I always won't go where Dad wanted to go, and but I wouldn't go down there by myself. So when we'd go down the basement, I always follow him, and I'd be all right when he'd turn the lights on. He'd get the lights on, I was okay. But when it come time to leave and come back upstairs, he'd always make me go first, Or he'd tell me, hey, you won't go first to, turn the lights out. Boogeyman's down here. So I would just run upstairs. And when I'd run upstairs, he'd gooch me. He'd pinch me on the back of the leg and make some kind of old howling, googlish noise. It'd just scare me to death. Well, I've always done the kids that way, gooch or pick or whatever, going up steps. Well, my oldest son, he's got a new wife, and they were coming up steps the other day, and he just reached up and gooched her on the back of the leg. And, ooh, boy, I just thought, no, son. she wasn't raised in a gooching family. She let him know real quick.
Dave, you talking about going in that cell? When I was a kid, I was always scared of the dark, I guess. And when I started deer hunting and turkey hunting, of course, we'd go out early in the morning and stay late at night, And it's like something just got older and didn't bother me, but I was scared. We'd play outside, during the summertime, so it was dark, but just certain areas, going to an old house or something like that, dark, no lights at night, or out on the farm or someplace like that, go out in the barn, it always made me uneasy. And I just kind of went the opposite direction where it didn't bother me at all. And I always enjoyed bow hunting more than gun hunting when I was deer hunting, but it's been back in the late 60s and early 70s. They just had, back then, they didn't start deer season to usually mid-October or something like that. It was already pretty cool by then. Let the thing drop a second. One of my buddies and I that got me interested in shooting a bow, I'd already been target shooting and shooting field archery and stuff like that, and I started doing a little deer hunting. We had this one place we used to hunt. It's up here on 85. If you're ever going towards Atlanta, you'll see a place up that other side. It's about around Carnesville, somewhere like that. It's a little restaurant up there. I guess it's still an Echo restaurant. We used to hunt on the other side of that property over there. It was public then. It was game management area, I guess. But we went up there one afternoon and got up in the tree stand about 2:00, and it was pretty cool. I had on a little jacket and took my jacket off. Of course, when you take your jacket off after climbing up in one of the stands, you get cold, and I put my jacket back on. And I stayed in the stands a little. It was dark. It was past legal shooting hours, and I had a deer walk up. I could see in the moonlight as a buck, had a buck walk up under me. I came, just a hair of going and taking a shot at him. Of course, with a bow, it would have been real foolish. And I said, nah. I came down out of the stand. I got to look around. I didn't have no flashlight with me. Started walking out of the woods, and the guy I was with, he was probably about 200 or 300 yards at least away from me. And he hollered at me one time, and I said this. I told him, I said, how about coming up this way now so I can, you got a light? He said, yeah. I said, how about coming up this way so I can see how to get out of here? And I kind of sat there. I just stayed there at the bottom of the tree. Knowing him to come up there, because I didn't know it was a barbed wire. There's usually a fence or something around there. Where I put up there, Chad, I put my stand up. I'd done a little scout, but I had this one spot where I couldn't see very good. And when we were coming out there, he said, good thing you didn't try to walk out. It was an open well there, not 25 yards from where that stand was. You couldn't see it. It's already sunk in and all. But, man, if I fell in that thing, it wasn't that deep. All you got to do is break a leg or something like that, and knock yourself out, and it'd take the daylight to find you. That was real lucky of me, but I'd never go in the woods without a flashlight anymore at night, I'd tell you that much.
Scary to even think about. That could have been pretty bad. I was in the army with a guy that was, he loved to deer hunt. And he climbed up a tree, oh, I don't know, 10, 15 feet up, I guess. We're going to lay in the crest of one of the branches, big oak tree. Somehow or another got up the thing in the limb he's going to sit in, crotch of it, it broke out. And he fell. broke his back. And it took him 6-7 hours to get back up the road. To get back to the truck. But, I mean, it messed him up. He's on the clock to me back the rest of his life. I mean, he was horrible. You know, you got to be careful. I mean, I just couldn't imagine that. That's one of my biggest fears is I'm extremely claustrophobic. And I'm one of the worst butt-whoopings I got. I went down into a well when I was a teenager trying to hide some Matilda Bay wine coolers from Dad. He and Mom went out of town fishing, and I got my hands on some Matilda Bay wine coolers, and gonna hide them from Dad so he wouldn't find them. So I took them out this old abandoned well with all the garbage, pizza boxes, cigarette butts. You know, I went and bought some Salem lights and those Matilda Bay wine coolers, and wasn't thinking. I just grabbed all the bags out of the bag, and my clothes and brand new tennis shoes is in there, and threw them down the well. And Mom and Dad called, said we're coming home a day early. And Mama figured out real quick where's your shoes. You know, $50 pair of Reeboks, and I can't explain where they at. So I went out there with a grappling hook. Dad's got a grappling hook for fish baskets. Out there tried to dig them out, couldn't dig them out. So got a friend to lower me down in the well with the winch on the front of the Bronco. That just didn't end well. Got caught, and I got one of the worst butt whoopings I ever got for doing that, which was really stupid. But figured out I was claustrophobic when I got down the bottom of it, and you know. But at any rate, I don't know how it got off on that. But we used to hog hunt a lot. We had a lot of dogs out here. We over 30 dogs. We had Hague plots, Vaughn plots, 2 Rhodesian Ridgebacks, a couple of Airedales. We never did get into the beagle kind of stuff, but we had a lot of dogs, and we'd go down to Perry, Florida every year and hog hunt 21 days at a time. And some of the best memories I've ever had being in the woods with Dad and hunting and dogs and, you know. But, you know, you got to be careful. You got to be real careful. Don't take much to get hurt at all.
KO4NUE and 4DJC. And when you talk about that guy that fell, my wife's first cousin, same thing. He was in a tree stand and he was coming down or something. He fell. He's a big guy. He was probably 6'4", you know, probably 220. He was a farmer. He, you know, muscular, strong, and all. I saw him, just, you know, young. Fell down, he fell and he broke his back. I think he broke his back and he might have broken his leg too, and he drug himself out like that. It took him several hours for him to get out. And got out there and they have a chicken, yeah, they got chicken houses and other stuff. They had a pretty good sized farm. They had a 2-way radio there and in the truck there, and he called on the radio and got him to come back and get him. But it took him months, and it might have taken him a year or so before he got, you know, he's okay now, but he don't get up in a tree stand no more. I don't climb trees anymore. I had a bad experience, and you know, 1 years ago, and I'm real cautious, and I just don't get up in tree stand anymore. I don't use a climbing stand anyway, but I don't do that anymore anyway to mount anything. But I tell you what, that scared me enough. Well, I was real cautious. I made sure I had me a light. But I was there. I was in there too late too. I didn't have no business staying that late in the stand. But I didn't hear him come out, so I wasn't coming out either. But yeah, those old wells and stuff like that, or just walking through an old house or something, you know, something might fall, you might fall through the floor. And you know, we got good flashlights these days. Back in those days, you had something you coon up with one of them real good, or you had a old rail that with two D cells in it.